Let us hearken back to 2003, a dirty, rainy day in Gorst. Pup was dumb enough to go into that little strip club right at that big bend in the highway before Kitsap Way in Bremerton. As there's nothing else to do in Bremerton, my bro and I chose that over bowling. This fresh-colored stripper sat down to talk. Wasn't the typical you want a VIP dance? Ploy for cash? She was like you, wanna fuck puppy, in so many words with her eyes. Being I had already dumped in the old hay bag before I left the house, I was already happy and content, and as you can imagine, super tired from the long drive. Insert blowing whiskey. Pumpy was soon putting on a pounding to a little beauty with the energy of Harry Reams. You should have seen me, Tom. Not bad for a special Valentine's Day. That's when I got hooked on women, I think. Generally, there's some downtime after a long night of making love, but not so fast.
Another one! Alright, we the best. I'm out.
With Hitler. The more I learn about that guy, the more I don't care for him.
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a color man. You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Yeah, you make good comments.
The weather is perfect, the field is fast at the Rose Bowl for tonight's ball game.
Okay, so as Joey was saying, just hit record because we were already starting to talk about trying to reconcile, you know, Huskies being undefeated and yet what we've seen on the field and yet also taking into account injuries and yet also not allowing that to be an excuse. And Joey made a good point. Joey, you referenced a moment ago that you made a post, which I haven't seen, but you said that you were pointing out how just last year in the middle of the, you know, October and into November, we were sitting around bitching about how the team wasn't fun to watch and we looked like crap. And then just a few weeks later, we were, you know, basking in the glow of big victories and went to be a 11-2 season. So.
Well, yeah, it was, you know, I went through, it was almost a month span. It was, you know, it started with the, I didn't include yesterday the loss to UCLA, but, yeah, it started, you know, October 8th with a loss to Arizona State, who finished, 3-9 or whatever they did. And then we followed it up. We came home. October 15th, 49-39 win versus Arizona. I just could not put them away. We were up by as many as 17 or 18 at one point. Couldn't put them away. Then go down to Cal on October 22nd, 28-21. I think they led 6-0 at halftime. And I think they were down. Were they down 14-13 at one point in that game?
To who?
I don't recall.
Cal. Last year.
I think it was tied. I think it was, were they, or maybe it was tied? I can't remember.
It was dip and tuck to the end is all I remember.
Yeah, but then they led 28-14, and they had to get, like, one defensive stop. Couldn't get it. Cal scores. And then I think the Huskies gave him the ball. I remember Cal having the ball when the game ended. And, you know, maybe it was Trice or ZTF or Martin. One of the three got a big sack to like, really put him, like, third and 20. What?
What's a sack?
Oh. Well, it's this thing that you get credit for when you tackle the quarterback behind the line of scrimmage. But,
Yeah,
well,
I didn't know you were allowed to do that.
That's one of those hidden treasure stats that we never see very often.
Sounds like you fellas need a refresher course.
It's all about berries these days.
Okay.
So they
little
get,
flesh there.
So they get a bye. They get a bye in late October, and they come back Friday night, November 4th, home win against Oregon State, 24-21. But they were losing. Washington had to. Oh no! Wait, was it tied or were they losing?
I mean, either way,
no,
that
was
awful.
It was tied. It was
game.
Tied. Yeah, I hit it. Yeah. I think they kicked a game-winning field goal. Was it
they
Peyton?
Did,
maybe
yeah.
It was Peyton Henry kicked a field goal. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Remember they had to convert a fourth down. They had a couple third-down conversions. It was like maybe the longest drive of DeBoer and, you know, the longest time-of-possession drive of DeBoer and Grubbs, you know, tenure here. And then, yeah, I just wrote that those five games, I remember doing a podcast after Cal or Oregon State, I can't remember, and we all three of us were like, I can't watch this team. It's not as fun as it was the first 4 weeks. It's frustrating, and they
okay,
they were 7-2. They were 7-2. And nobody had any confidence going into Eugene, and look what happened.
Well, you guys did. You guys predicted a victory.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did.
And
yeah,
I publicly called you guys out. So
yeah, I don't watch a lot of I try not to watch a lot of fake sports news and Twitter hype on that fucking program down in Eugene, you know. And I just never buy the hype, so that's why.
If I could take a moment here, I'm going to read in chronological order, the episode titles of our podcast last year, starting with Kent State and all the way up to the Oregon game where we won in Autzen. So here we go. September 4th, 2022, Pennix stands firm in leading UW over Kent State. And then the next week, Michigan State is where the rubber meets the road. So I think that's when we beat Portland State or whoever. Pennix puts a pound into Michigan State's rounding. And then upper middle class, cool and 4-0. And then this must have been
Stanford.
A lot. Because it said October 1st. It says Elton John could have tackled better.
Yeah, that was UCLA.
And then the next week was suddenly we're terrified of Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona State. Okay.
Then the next week was we were up by 18, but still yelling at Talapapa.
See? Yeah, they were up by 18. We couldn't put them away.
And let's see here. Then the next week after that, it was here to feeling good.
Well, they scored 49 points, and we were pissed off.
We're back,
oh,
bitches.
Man.
Back, bitches. And then the next week, which was October 23rd, the title was Here's to Feeling Good All the Time. I don't know what game that was after, but...
October 23rd was... that was at win at Cal.
Oh,
Huskies moved to 6-2. Yeah, they went down to a Cal team that finished 4-8. But yeah, I bet Cal was like 4-5 at the time, or something like that.
But obviously, I was being very caustic and sarcastic there. But and then. The week after
okay,
that.
Hold on. I remember before that Cal game, I remember us saying that Cal was in danger of being bowl eligible because we were looking at their schedule, and they had, like, basically the hardest schedule of conference play coming up. And I remember being worried about that game, like, well, they have to get one of these games. I remember being really worried about it.
And then... The next one was October 29th, and it was a Rusty Ulofosio is better than a Cam Bright and Chris Maul. And that was a Joey comment that turned into a title. And then two more. And then November 5th, someday there will be a way to locate Roadkill. So that was in reference to Joey's brother. And then last but not least, Husky Stunned Ducks at Autzen Stadium in one of our most highest rated podcasts ever. So,
yeah,
there you go. So, Joey, you make a good point. We're kind of repeating last year, sort of, except we're undefeated.
Yeah, there must
They won the ugly games. It's just like Belichick, you know. It's not all about it's just winning ugly, playing not to lose, but always winning.
Well, all right. So let's start with this. What the hell is wrong with the offense? Is it simply that we don't have McMillan? Is it the offensive line injuries and shuffling guys around and everybody realizing they can blitz up the middle on us now?
Yeah, that interior looks – the interior looks bad. And
shaky.
Yeah, shaky, yeah. Banged up, was yesterday, right?
Are you guys there?
I didn't know what the last thing you said was.
Oh, Bulo was back, right?
Yeah, Bulo was back. I mean, I've never been a big Bulo guy, especially since Don Donovan and Jimmy Lake having him pull against Montana. He couldn't get out of his stance. But I thought he would be better. I thought he would be okay in a pass pro offense just because he's long and he just kind of has to stand up and put his arms out. But, I mean, I think it's a combination of all those things. I think they might miss your dear old friend Talapapa and pass pro too. I think sometimes they might have just kept him back there as like a sixth offensive lineman. And I mean, I think something, the Penix thing of what the fuck is wrong with him or not wrong with him is very, very not comforting and weird. There was like a tweet from like Varell last night saying that he looks like he's like got yellow eyes and he looks like sick and stuff like that. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, I don't know. I'm starting to worry that he has like a torn ACL or something and they're just having to play with it. And then he's like just physically having to take a bunch of drugs and just fight through it. And that's something I'm worried that he has a really serious injury and he's just playing through it. And it's an accumulation of all those things, because the fact that he will not run at all is like to the point where it's like, is he afraid that he's going to have to slide, that he's going to like fuck up his knee sliding or something? And yeah, I think something's wrong with him. And that's a big problem too. I also, with the offense, knew, I don't know if I even call it a conspiracy theory, but like, I think after the Oregon win, I do wonder if schools went really hard after Grubb, and DeBoer, and there's something going on with that. Like, there may be, maybe they're not taking it, but they're like listening to offers, or maybe Grubb has fucking taken an offer or something, and it's messing with the dynamic of everything, and he's like distracted. Yeah, it's, I'm a little worried about something with that too, like some sort of, because the team just looks off too, like they don't seem like they have their usual energy. Yeah.
No urgency, no cohesion, no fire.
And yet they still put up 42 points.
I mean,
it should have been 56.
It's crazy.
It should have been
crazy.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, I mean, Stanford's pretty bad. I would also add, though, I think I would prefer, especially as a fan, especially coming after the Oregon game where I was like, Jesus, okay, at least I get to watch a couple games that aren't going to, you know, spike my blood pressure for 4 hours for a couple weeks here. I need that. But, I mean, the beating the brakes off of shitty teams is an overrated fucking overrated metric in football. I mean, not that I don't want them to do that, but people get too excited about teams sometimes blowing out teams. and vice versa. I mean, it's not like I do think DeBoer. I think DeBoer and the staff do have an emphasis on like, hey, let's play our big games and not worry as much about beating these teams by fucking 40 that suck, that don't want to be there. So, I mean, I'm not as terrified of it as I maybe should be. Yeah.
Well, we got breaking news here. Bananas and Blondes is posted on the boards of Hardcore Husky. It says the official excuse for the Stanford game has been released. Half the team, including Penix, had the flu. Then he said, glad we got our flu game out of the way and got the win. Everything should go back to normal from here on out. And then Cunt Waffle posted a picture of Michael Jordan against Utah Game 6. So
that's a weird thing to put out there. But, I mean, I had something to crud like a few weeks ago, and it fucked me up to where I was like weak for like weeks, where I thought it was just because I got really hungover on top of it. But like, I played softball, we've talked about before, and like, I could barely swing a bat for like 2 weeks. So I don't know. There is weird shit going around out there. And I could see if the whole team got something like that. I mean, they're fucking younger and healthier than I am, so I would hope it wouldn't affect them that much, but there is weird shit going around. I will say that.
I don't think anybody thought you ever had light tower power to begin with.
I could barely, I was just sore and tired every day. It was fucking weird.
Somebody just sent me a message that they're having issues with the site. So that's a whole, if I sounded distracted a second ago. So
did the site give up 32 points to Stanford? Is that the problem?
No, we had a little like DDoS attack on Friday. And so somebody out there doesn't like the site. So anyway,
landing.
Not <It's raining.
laughs> Do we have breaking news there, Wooly?
I don't know.
New conspiracy theory. Yeah, Lanning has the IT team at Oregon trying to take out Hardcore Husky.
Put that on your semifinal list before you announce the grand winner in December.
It'll make the cut. It'll make the cut, for sure.
That's funny. So I guess as our consensus going forward here amongst us three on the podcast, that we're not as concerned about the Husky offense as we might otherwise be.
Oh, I'm concerned.
Oh, okay.
I'm not. I would just say overall, I might not be as concerned of like the internet narratives and stuff of just overreacting to like week to week stuff. I think the team is kind of a game to game team sometimes, and they're not the Peterson team where, you know, you, play nice and tight and, you know, you blow out average teams, but you get gut punched by nothing to lose teams. So then you lose every big game. I think they're different than that. I mean, it means they could drop a shitty game to an average or shitty team, but I don't know. I just kind of trust that. I think they manage their schedule and they manage who they're playing against. But I definitely am scared shitless of a lot of the stuff that's going on, particularly how potentially hurt Penix might be.
Well, it might just be the flu. I mean, a friend of mine was on the sideline yesterday, and I only mentioned that not in the Kim Reynolds braggadocio sense, but I mean, because he was there and we were not.
You are not on the sidelines. I was on the sidelines.
But I was texting with him, and my friend was just a few feet away from Penix at one point, and I said, does he look sick or what's up? And he just said he's walking gingerly and it's just hard to tell what's going on is what he said. And so I was like, huh.
But no, I think there's a lot of more than just the play in the scheme. And my biggest concern is that there's something with health him and something off the field or something with the coaching staff of someone's taking a job offer or listening to job offers.
Well, who's going to hire Grubb right now?
I mean, after the Oregon game. I think after the Oregon game, even though I didn't think that he had his best game, that one, which is just also so fucking weird of their, like, hyped up on their run defense, and the Huskies ran really fucking well against them, but then now can't run to save their lives against ASU or Stanford. It's just fucking weird.
And I know that Dylan Johnson ended up with something like 84 carries, I think it was. Or, excuse me, 84, 84 yards on 18 carries. I don't have the stats in front of me, but that's a little bit misleading. He got some good yardage late in the game.
But yeah.
3/4 of the game, we were just running into a concrete wall. I mean, it was really hard to watch.
It feels like the last two games, Stanford and Arizona State were playing with like 13 or 14 guys.
Yes. Yep.
It's just crazy. How's there nowhere to go and on the run game, and nobody's open in the pass game. This is bizarre. But again,
for a defense that ranked 126th in the nation.
Well, we have again. It showed last night. We have playmaking tight ends that we are underusing badly.
You took the words out of my mouth. Yeah, really bad.
It's really bad. Culp desperately wanted to fuck up that touchdown that he got, but I mean, he was one.
You texted that at the time. It was there for the taking, Joey.
He wanted to coug it so bad, but he was wide open. They got him on that. They got him on that screen pass. I think Westover had like 3 catches for, I don't know, he averaged like 12 or 13 yards a catch or something like that. Last week there was a play, I can't remember where it was, but Quentin Moore was like wide open on a play that Penix just missed him. And then Cuevas has all but disappeared after making some big plays against Arizona. They're underusing the tight ends, and I would say that Grubb had another odd play calling sequence at the end of the first half.
Yes,
they had a minute, and I know they're trying to be aggressive, but some point they have to get the clock like moving.
Yeah.
I mean, they ran like 9 seconds off the clock and then punted it right back to Stanford. It literally was like 9 seconds. I was like, oh my God, they're going to go down and get a field goal out of this.
Somebody, I don't remember who it was. I do remember they had they're a WOM member, but I don't remember who it was, but they were kind of arguing with me there on the boards in the game thread. And I was like, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It's not like you have to throw 3 passes downfield or run up the middle 3 times and run the clock out. We could have done a draw play on 2nd down or 3rd down or something. We don't run draw plays. We never run draw plays, I've noticed. And
yeah.
Looking forward to, and I don't know why, especially when teams are pinning back their ears and really coming after us. And then if you look to either the USC game or Utah after that, either and maybe both of those games, or at least one of those games, would be a prime opportunity, though, to use Romo Odunze as Jalen Polk as a little bit of a decoy. Let them clear out space and get those tight ends out there and end up with a game where Westover gets 7 catches and Culp gets 6 catches or something. And And it would just open up a whole other thing, and it would give future opponents that would be scouting us something to be extra worried about. It's, you know, these are not mediocre playmakers that we have at tight end, as you were alluding to a moment ago. And I don't know. And instead, we get in a situation where teams are blitzing more the last couple weeks, it seems, or more than a couple weeks. And a hand is in Penix's face. And then he's kind of forcing passes to Odunze when Odunze's not always open. And then plus we were all kind of spoiled in the first, you know, 5 weeks of the season or whatever it was, 4 weeks, where guys are just running open in the secondary no matter where Penix was looking, and he had all day to throw. So, anyways, those are my thoughts there.
Yeah, I think we're getting everybody's best effort too right now. So this is something.
Yes,
we are. That fucking quarterback does not drop dimes on every other team. Alton last night, he could not miss last night.
At one point I was yelling.
Joey, we have the iron just box. Roll over and die. Just quit, please.
That would have been a great counterbalance to Tim Brando and I'm forgetting the guy's name.
Spencer Tillman.
Spencer Tillman. You would be yelling, just roll over and die. They were like, oh, look at Stanford go. This is so inspiring. These kids from Stanford.
It's sad. I love Tim Brando, but last night was bad.
He went on for about 15 minutes after that drop on fourth down. He could not let it go. You almost wonder if he lost money or something on it.
I always liked the announcers playing hypothetical, like, oh, if they would have had that, you know, catch. It's like they were still down in the game, and we don't know what would have happened after that play. Remember the playoff game where the Saints got completely jobbed, and they wanted to review pass interferences for a season after that. It was probably 3 or 4 years ago in the NFL. It's like they make that field goal. How do you know they make that field goal? we're always playing this hypothetical, like a field goal can get blocked or a kicker can miss the field goal. You know, you're not supposed to play hypothetical on, you know, in my opinion, when you're being a play-by-play guy, you shouldn't be playing hypothetical, but. Yeah, I generally like Tim Brando. He'll go on Softy's show every once in a while, and he's fun to listen to. By the way, on Softy's show 2 weeks ago after the Oregon game, they had Penix on the show, and he mentioned something about getting the wind knocked out of him. And again, they didn't follow up with any questions about that. But, you know, you kept hearing cramps, cramps, cramps. And he kind of paused when he said, I kind of had the wind knocked out of me or whatever. I think he slipped a little information that, you know, was a little sort of misleading and more than what everybody's been letting on. You know, I bet he does have like a bruised rib or something.
Well, I don't know. And then what's going on what's going on with McMillan? And it's turning into almost a mockery. Like, oh, he's ready to go, and then he's out there for two plays. Maybe he's out there long enough to do a, you know, line up wrong or whatever and get a 5-yard penalty, and then he's not seen again, and then there he is on the sideline in the third quarter in his street clothes. So,
well, I actually got my Twitter guy who said he's going to join the Hall of Fame of Husky guys who look unbelievable, who then get one injury and then completely just fall apart or never Never Do Anything Again of Azeem Victor and Trey Adams. Really getting worried it's going to become. Like, which I don't I feel
company.
Like. I feel like, yeah, I feel like it doesn't happen to other programs. But, yeah, it's like he's just going to fade into the ether of, like, he's going to, like, never come back. And he's going to, like, declare for the draft and go undrafted and then, like, make a practice squad and then just disappear because, like, yeah.
Like it just Eugene feels like Burkholder.
Yeah, it just feels like that's the path now at this point. It's very strange. Like, he's healthy enough to go out for one play, and as you said, like, fuck up and then never go back in again. Like, is it something mentally going on top of, like, the injury? Like, it just seems weird. And when the injury against Michigan State, like, everyone I was with was, like, we watched it, was, like, that guy's out for the season. Like, it looked like he really fucked up his knee, but then they were, like, downplaying it, like, he was fine, and then clearly not. Like, it just feels like all the good luck of, like, injuries last year, for the most part, is other than, like, the UCLA and ASU games, and just coming back hard the other way of just, you know, everyone also downplaying, like, they lost the starting center, the guy who was going to start at right guard, and then, like, Buelo, lost him a bunch, and he's either at least banged up or something, who was going to be, like, the other replacement guard. So it's rough. And Cam Davis, you know, not that I think he's great, but it seems like they don't trust anyone other than Dylan Johnson to play, and he came into the season banged up, so who knows if he's not, like, hurt again. Because he kind of doesn't look the same. It's just
and here's the deal. Like,
yeah.
Here's the deal, and I'll preface that by saying that James Cornell had a post from just about half an hour ago where it says Scott Huff officially sucks again. But one of the things he says on here is he says Tybo Rogers, his usage is downright perplexing. And, like, somebody, multiple people were complaining about Tybo in the game thread yesterday, but it's like he gets one carry and he's an undersized guy to begin with. And he's going, and then he runs, you know, it's the play up the middle, as I recall, right into the teeth of the Stanford defense. And he was either for 2 yards or minus 2 yards. And he didn't carry the ball at all the rest of the game. So it's like, you can't judge him on that. You know, it's, it's very perplexing. Like, all of a sudden randomly, okay, put, you know, who's the guy, I'm forgetting his name, Asad Adams Jr. He's in there, yeah, like, at the very beginning of the game. It's like, oh, is he going to get 15 carries today? And it's like 3 carries. And then I don't think we saw him the rest of the day. So it's very weird.
Yeah. And Nixon barely plays now. I assume with Rodgers, he can't pass. He's probably not a good pass blocker. So they probably, you know, they can't really put him out there that much because he's either a liability or it's obvious. They make it an obvious run call. So I kind of get why he's used sparingly. And I just think with their offense.
And I remember him going around the end. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I said something wrong.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He ran around the end and got a first down, I remember, too. But sorry, go ahead.
But I bet that would be something with him, or maybe he's a guy who fumbled in practice a lot, so they don't want to give him the ball too much. The weird thing is, it's definitely probably on the boards and on Twitter, it's just like Dylan Johnson came in as like a guy who I think had more receiving yards at Mississippi State than running yards, but he's not used in the pass game at all. Like, he's never...
At all.
I do wonder if they're keeping him for pass pro a lot because the O-line's struggling so much, so they really need him back there. But the fact that he is just, like, God, not used at all, like, even a little bit in the pass game is just strange in the tight ends. So it just seems like unless Odunze and Polk get wide open or on their own, that the Penix has to throw it away. And
don't you need safety valves, though?
Yeah, I know, and it doesn't, like, the number – Bernard, I guess, got injured, but he's been kind of weird. Like, he was seemingly healthy against Oregon until he got hurt, and he was just playing none. And now Dallas Jackson's gone again, apparently, and Denzel Boston. Yeah, you're now forgetting about – it's been so strange an injury that you're forgetting about guys completely that are just not playing or not making much of an impact. Like, Bernard just seems like –
now seems like he's just kind of an afterthought. And again, yeah, if it's not Odunze and Polk making a play, that it's over. And, you know, both of those guys now have back-breaking fucking fumbles, which to gripe too of like the play in the Stanford one last night where you see the Stanford guy come in with a fucking Hulk punch at the ball, which worked 0.00000% of the fucking time ever fucking worked. Fucking works. Not only does it work, the ball bounces backwards right to a Stanford guy who's out of position again to get it. Like, yeah, that I wasn't really paying attention to the play at first. I went back and watched it, and I was like, is this guy really doing that stupid fucking punch thing? And it's like, oh God, that never works.
Well, it seems like their fumbles are they're fighting for extra yards that aren't, you know,
that valuable.
Aren't really that valuable. I mean, you know, Rome is, you know, dancing around trying to get another yard or two, and you know, just do. I mean, people think it's soft, but. You know, I mean, look what Tyler Lockett does. He's just like, he turns around, there's like three guys there. He's like, fuck it, I'm diving forward for 3 yards and that's it. You know, it's like, but he also did break his leg in half. So I don't blame him that much for it. You know,
hang on though. I haven't watched the Seahawks hardly at all this year. So maybe something's changed, but at least up through last year, Lockett wouldn't just like fall down and, whatever, he would always fight for an extra 2 or 3 yards, but he wouldn't try to do anything. He wouldn't try to pull a Jake Browning and run around the entire circumference of the pursuing defense or whatever with the speed.
The last 2 years, Tyler Lockett, he'll get his first down and, you know, he'll make sure he gets over the line. And if there's three guys in front of him, he'll just kind of dive forward or he'll just kind of run out of bounds, you know, because.
But yeah, he's like always going forward.
He broke his leg in half a couple years ago.
No, at the goal line. No, that was more than a couple. I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago. But it was on a deep pass that he caught at the goal line, I remember. It was pretty
gruesome.
Yeah,
the guy landed on his leg.
Anyways, I wanted to push back on the notion that he just, like, falls down or whatever. I mean, he's tough. I mean, he's got my respect, unless something's changed this year. But
The Jamarcus Shepherd makes that deal about, you know, you catch the pass, you know, those are my yards. And anything you get after the catch is your yards. So he makes that big deal like he wants them to, you know, get more yards. But there was a point, I saw that fumble coming, you know, a mile away. There was a point in the game where I was like, you know, in Arizona State, they've, you know, Polk had that fumble and he's fighting for yards that just, you know, it's not there. You're in a pile and, you know, Rome is like fighting for yards. And I had a bad feeling right when that play was happening. I was like, God, don't fumble the ball.
I mean, yeah, it's one thing to
fumble
fight.
goes right to Stanford. Stanford fumbles the ball 2 or 3 times yesterday, goes right back to a Stanford player. So we're not as lucky as people think we are right now.
You mean the team that hasn't recovered a defensive fumble all year?
Exactly. Yeah.
I was going to say, there's a big, I remember last year a lot, like in early in the year, Odunze doing that a lot of fighting on a 23-yard catch, fighting to turn it into a 26-yard catch. When he's already got the first down of being like, and he's not, he bulked up a lot this year, but it's like, God, you're not that, like, you're not DK Metcalf or like David Boston. Like, just go down, like, don't get that extra yard and a half. And McMillan would do it too. It's like, I was always worried that they were going to fumble in those situations because I feel like he has, which I respect the effort, but like, yeah, it seems like it could be you're fighting when you've already got the first down and you're just getting a few almost meaningless yards, like not really worth it. It's just, I mean, I probably will move from griping about the offense to gripe on the defense, you know, and it's kind of the perfect thing too, where it's like,
last week the offense was just insanely terrible, but the defense was actually really good for most of the game, at least keeping the score down. And then now it's the opposite, where it's like, okay, the offense is going to do their job, and now the defense is just going to fall apart against, God, I don't know, in those first few drives, I just watched Stanford's offense, and I'm like, this is almost like Colorado last year level bad of, like, they have these, like, really, like, a long-haired and white skill position guys that look fucking slow. Their O-line looks slow. They're giving up pressure every play. This quarterback is just throwing the ball away without even looking. And it's like, okay, there's no way they could possibly make this a game. And then after like the third or fourth drive, it was like, Jesus Christ, they can't stop this Stanford offense. And this quarterback is just unbelievable.
31 of 50, 367 yards, and yeah, he ran for 81 yards.
Yeah.
So we were right back there, and yeah, there's some injuries, but you know, like last night I'm watching Oregon State and Arizona, and the final was like 27-24, and you're like, how do these guys have guys who can play defense? Like, why? And then you watch them, like, these are a bunch of fucking endless parade of guys who are just like, they're not NFL guys. They weren't big recruits, but they can play college defense, and they're not missing a bunch of tackles. They're making sacks. They're knocking the ball away. And I just don't get it. They can't find it. I just don't get it at all.
Well, here's a question for you guys. It's 5 years from now. It's October of December of 2028. And we're wondering why it is that Jack Westover is now going to his third Pro Bowl, and yet he only had like 28 catches in his senior season for Washington.
I mean, we've got the new track record of Washington was legitimately tight end U for like 20 years. Then you know, even ASJ was kind of, it's weird because I think he's like the all-time leading tight end receiver in Pac-12 history still, but he oddly still seemed underutilized. Like, they should have just literally thrown to him every fucking play, and I feel like they only did like four or five times a game. And then you have Will Disley, who is not a Pro Bowler, but like, you know, a really good NFL receiving tight end. Drew Sample, who's had a weird pro career, but was a second round pick. And Hunter Bryant,
still there.
Hunter Bryant, like a poor man's Brock Bowers before Brock Bowers, like way ahead of his time, and they barely got him the ball. And now we still can't. It's like the tight end U. There's like the pretty accurate DDY. Oh, Kate Otten. And you got Kate Otten, who like is making NFL game winning touchdown catches in the NFL as a rookie, but John Don and Jimmy Lake couldn't get him the ball more than once or twice a game. And it's just confounding. And you play in that
over his amazing hands.
Yeah, and he's good. He's good when he gets the ball too. Like, he's never breaking a break it for 50, but he always gets like an extra 5 or 6 yards, like guaranteed. So I don't know.
I never worry about fumbling the ball, which is weird. Like he goes and you know he's one of the few guys that on the team that can break tackles. There's I mean, we say the bad tackling. Do we have anybody on offense that you feel comfortable breaking tackles? But that's hard to tackle?
Dylan Johnson.
Yeah, I guess he breaks some tackles. But it's just every time there's like a one-on-one thing, you know, it just seems like, well, we're gonna get tackled here.
It's been uncomfortable. It's been a long year of not extending.
Joey Zitter dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, should we start looking at questions?
Look, and all the bad we're talking about, we're 8-0. You know, we could go on about the officiating too, which is just
so bad. I can't wait to be done.
Well,
I know the Big Ten has hired Pac-12 refs, but it'll be different, you know, administration involved. You know, I'm sure the Big Ten will be like, you're not the stars of this conference, so please get off the fucking TV screen. And hopefully they didn't hire that woman that's on the sideline that's the worst fucking ref, you know. I'm not saying it just because she's a woman, although it's possible it's because she's a woman that she's bad. So.
Well, I mean, it is very possible, if we're going to be completely honest, that, you know, in the same way that they've, like, lowered the standards for the Navy SEALs and everything, you know.
Yeah.
It is. I'm not saying it's inherent in being a woman that you would be, what's the word, automatically incompetent when it comes to officiating a game of college football. But there were some very strange calls going on there, and I don't know. And as I said before, you know, then you have the Pac-12 halftime show where you've got a 6-foot-tall woman and two guys that are 5'4" standing next door, and it's just a very weird dynamic.
You're really bothered by that.
Because it was intentional. They're like these two guys that look, you know, it's just.
I thought
it was
Woolley
not good.
Was a conspiracy guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a conspiracy. I'm right.
Well, I got
the Pac-12 is very woke.
Yeah, I got that's a complete
news alert.
Baseless.
Yeah,
baseless.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad I'm sitting down for that news.
Yeah.
I had to break it to you, Joey.
80 commercials a game about that shit didn't give it away. Tip its hat to me. But with officiating, you know, I don't know if there's any Cougs or Beavs or Duck fans who were so they were really, really incensed last week of the non-call on Muhammad on the ASU receiver that they were just – that's all they could talk about. I think some showed up on the boards to bitch about it. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see what their thoughts on the Odunze one that turned into a fucking interception that extended the game, which was worse.
Yeah.
A worse no call with a much better chance to catch the ball, because that was the thing, too, of the guy ASU last week. It's like, well, that guy's also not going to catch that ball on top of that. I hope they're all really concerned about that and still care about the level of officiating. Oh, they don't? They just are fucking trolls? The second thing, which is, like, something I've noticed a lot this year on both sides. I'm not just thinking it's a conspiracy against Washington, but a lot of these pass interference calls I've noticed this year, at least in college, like, the receiver is the one initiating contact, and then kind of, like, hand fights, like, 75% of the time, and then they fucking flag the defensive player, and it's like, how is that fair? Like, Odunze has gotten plenty of them where I'm kind of like, I guess, but, like, again, he initiated the contact, like, slowed down or, like, used it. And then, like, even that, like, it's still probably 60% by the end of the play of, like, 60% of the contact was, like, from the receiver. Like, I think they got to look at that, I think, at the offseason or something to be like, we got to stop just automatically calling defensive pass interference. And you never see offensive pass interference called, like, ever. Or just be like, hey, we're not going to flag this as much. Because Muhammad's getting that a lot, too.
We had one earlier this year.
Yeah. But, I mean, Muhammad's getting that a lot, too. We're like, yeah, you watch the receiver. He, like, pushes him and, like, kind of, like, grabs at his hands. And then, like, yeah, then there's kind of a little bit of contact before the ball gets there. But, like, how is that fair for the receiver to kind of create it every single time? So I think there's something they got to look at there.
So will there – this week was on, you know, he's on his Tuesday hit with Softy or whatever. And he brings up, you know, oh, it's terrible no call in that Arizona State game, you know, with Muhammad or whatever. Like, he brings that up and Softy says, yeah, there was also on the drive before or whatever, there was also the Polk getting you know, publicly sodomized and, you know, in front of, you know, the Husky Stadium crowd. And Wilner's like, yeah. I mean, there's bad calls both ways. And it's like, fuck you, Wilner. You're just going to bring up one call and ignore that, you know, basically it was a wash. You can find, you know, bad calls.
people are so focused on, you know, bad calls going Washington's way right now. It's fucking weird.
Yeah, I don't think they ever replayed it too, but the new thing too of like starting every meltdown of like they run for a first down, get a big run, and it's automatically called back for a holding call, then all hell breaks loose.
Oh.
It was on Kalepo. It just keeps happening every game where it's like, all right, a 15-yard run. What? No, there's the flag, and now it's first and 20, and then now we're going to be punting. It's going to be third and 37 pretty soon here. Like, that just always seems to fucking happen. They don't seem to do well with if they get a running procedure, a running penalty on them. Yeah, it's just like, yeah, the officiating's a nightmare. There's a bunch of other shit going on in the conference outside of that. A little salty about, yeah, all the Cougs and weirdos. It's just, I don't know. Again, not conspiracy guy. It's just weirdly, because I still go on Twitter.
You're the conspiracy guy.
I guess I am. This isn't
your official role.
It's just a weird thing I don't understand of, like, if I get on Twitter, there just seems to be this weird energy of, like, a lot of other teams' fans just, like, bitching about Washington constantly, or not bitching, just gleefully, like, want Washington to, like, fail. And there's not the same energy for, like, Oregon. But I think it's just because, like, Twitter's a lot of small dick energy, fucking nerd, angry nerds who are attracted to weird, trying way too hard, fucking dorky shit like the Oregon program is, and just, like, hyping yourself up, So they don't like the more basic traditional college football program that's just been good and makes sense why they're good.
Well, I like to do this every year, and I'll do it again now. Ladies and gentlemen, this is my impression of Joey's impression of Oregon State fans. Fuck you! Fuck you, Huskies! Fuck you! The hell was that?
I opened the sliding glass door.
Like a cat was being strangled or something.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'm on Orcas Island, and I'm opening the deck to show my girlfriend a heron that's in a tree that looks like a pterodactyl. So that was the sliding glass door.
The ugliest things on the planet.
You're multitasking. You guys want to do the questions now?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Sure.
Such as they are,
we still haven't talked about how bad the defense is, but.
Wait,
I did look up last night that DeBoer had an odd loss first week of October when he was at his 2021, his last season at Fresno. They went to Hawaii and lost.
Wow.
Like a touchdown or something to Todd Graham when he was coaching Hawaii.
Yeah, I remember that.
They lost by a touchdown, and Hawaii finished like 6-7 that year. That's what I looked
at. Yeah,
like.
I remember
so
that.
So he had a weird, it was a weird loss, you know, and then they almost ran the table. They lost at home to Boise State like in early November. That season, too.
But, Todd Graham at Hawaii. That was short-lived.
Oh, I think he pissed off. I think he pissed off, all the administration there. So.
Well, they gave him a letter of reprimand, but he couldn't read it.
The attendance of that game was zero. There was no fans in that game. No crowd.
Are we talking about Hawaii or are we talking about Stanford?
Hawaii.
I wasn't trying to be funny.
The Husky fans were obviously louder than Stanford fans yesterday.
That was Brando's only criticism of Stanford for the entire 3 hours, was that here we are, late October, the fifth-ranked team in the nation is in town, and you've got 47 people there.
Well, as I thought it, I sent it to, me and Wooly
are on another text thread, and it just seems weird that, okay, Fox is basically partnering up with Washington, right? And the Big Ten, and they're moving over.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you pumping up Washington? Why are you so...
Or staying neutral, at least. Yeah.
Yeah, no, fuck that. Washington's your program now. Like, tell Brando, like, you need to shit on Stanford this whole game. Their crowd sucks.
No.
Their fan base sucks. They're going to ESPN. They're going to be partnered up with ESPN. That's our competitor. You know, you need to start pumping up Washington.
But it would be like, okay, so Stanford facing a 3rd and 2. Spencer, if you're Stanford here, what do you do on 3rd and 2? And then, you know,
yeah.
It's like, and then, you know, oh, an incomplete pass. That's just so unfortunate because the guy got a good break off the line of scrimmage there. And it's just so unfortunate, he kept saying over and over every time something went wrong. And again, we don't want to be the three guys that are sitting here bitching about the announcers were against us. But it was really neurotic. It was really
weird.
It was as bad as I've ever seen it.
There was even a weird thing where, like, I think it was on the first drive, like, Penix saw the defensive offside, so he just chucked it to Odunze and intercepted it. And they never acknowledged that. It was like, yeah, like, obviously it's like, oh, bad pass there, bad. It's like, yeah, he knows, like, he saw it, and then everyone knows that. And then, like, on the 92-yard touchdown, they were just desperately trying to make you think that it was going to be offensive pass interference. And they replayed it, and they were like, oh, yeah, that was definitely a defensive pass interference.
Because they were sitting there going, like, what was exactly what they were saying? It's like, oh, it's just, you know, you're having such a tough year already if you're Stanford, and then you make a great play like that, and you have it come back. It's like, but Penix was forcing it because he knew he had the offside and some shit.
It was so bad. I'd also say, I mean, I think some of the thing you might see with all the, like, relentless blitzing the past 2 weeks is, like, you have teams that have nothing to lose, too, because they're, like, after that 92-yarder and shit, you're like, God, they're going to have to, like, either, one, catch them more in these blitzes, or they're going to, like, calm down, because, like, that shit's pretty risky. When you're playing teams like that have nothing to lose, they're just like, yeah, we'll still keep blitzing every play, because big shit if we lose by 20, where people forget, too, if you're playing, like, a tight, big even game, if you're a coach blitz, like if Oregon would have just been blitzing every fucking play and you get beat by 20, you're like a fucking idiot if you keep doing that. And that's just not how you play in tighter, bigger games as well, unless you're Nick Aliotti, and then every single big game magically is at home and the other team like slips and falls and you win the game. But yeah,
well, so that pass interference that Odunze got, they got the call, you know, right before that pick, right? And,
yeah,
you know, Spencer Tillman is, you know, like, oh, I don't know about that call. You know, it could have, you know, they could have held on to the flag on that call, or, you know, that, you know, he was making excuses, you know, like, oh, the back judge really has to see something with that call, and the sideline ref, they need to get a conversation going, you know, and really, you know, really making excuses for that call, right? And then the one in the end zone where he got the interception was way worse. The guy doesn't turn around,
mm-hmm.
and he's mm-hmm. face guarding, and they don't say anything about that one. They don't mm-hmm. say nothing about that, but, you know, when Muhammad actually turned around on a PI call that he got earlier in the game, and they were all for that one. They're, oh, yep, he didn't turn around in time. Well, he didn't turn around in time, but he turned around, right? He actually tried to make a play on the ball with his arm, you know. And then the last thing I'll say, because we're rambling. We were going to go to questions, but the last thing I'll say is Tetros is constantly saying he would love to have a Washington game.
and they assign him to something else, and it's like it's like, are they doing this on purpose to not?
Oh God, Joey! Forgot. All right, Willie, put that one on the list.
Yep. Blocking
as pathetic as it is,
because he doesn't hate Washington.
Yeah,
I will say also, Petros is like the only. It's like the only analyst. He's like the only analyst in college football now that just isn't a big fucking cheerleader. Isn't like a big cheerleader, and specifically for Oregon in a lot of ways. I think so. I do wish he would do every fucking game.
Petros is going to do the Washington game. No, we're not going to give him the Washington game. Fuck him. Fuck Washington.
He gets the fake Oregon. He gets the fake Oregon hype, and he also calls out USC for
he's
not
great.
Being as good.
Him and RG3 are wonderful.
Being phony, and not being as good, and just wait, he'll be the first national guy to say like, I think Jen Cohen kind of sucks.
Going against the narrative, which again will be a woke narrative for a while about how wonderful she is and a breath of fresh air, and everybody's enjoying her upbeat personality throughout the athletic department. And but then, you know, she's gonna have to manage certain things, and the phone calls to the Peterson household at dinner time are gonna ramp up, and you know, we've seen this movie before, so. You know, I still can't fully believe that she's gone. It happened so out of the blue. So, you know.
Oh, and they hired a guy really quick too.
And a really good hire, it seems. You know, there's no warning signs yet. So.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we all expected the worst, or at least I did. You know. So.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, let's get to the questions, even though I left that page. So hang on. Okay, here's the – need to scroll up here and over to page one. A pod for our pissed-off pods. Okay. So Grundlestiltskin wants to know who's the first call in the head coach search. Obviously, Grundle's concerned that Alabama might come and poach DeBoer or maybe Michigan. And he wants to know you know, who's going to replace DeBoer at that point. So, I don't know. Is that even a question we need to expend any brain energy on? Because I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's very happy here. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, his daughter just enrolled. I don't know.
He played a large role in the AD, picking the AD. It just seems like he would get fired for poor performance before he would, and that's not going to happen. He could go 7-6, as we've said. If you're a good citizen and likable, you can go 7-, you know, Jen Cohen showed that. You can be crappy at your job, and Sark showed that. Sark could have, I did a post years ago where I said, or maybe you guys weren't on Hardcore Husky at that time, but Sark was going 7-6 every year, and he was getting irritated at press conferences because Hardcore Husky was actually the one that started calling him 7-win Steve, and then he got referenced to that at a press conference. And he was literally irritated by that. But I made a post where he could be at Washington for 30 years. He could go 7-6 every year and then finish with 210 career victories and be one of the all-time greats, you know? And there's some truth in that because they weren't going to fire him. But you can't do that at USC. And Lincoln Riley, they're starting to pull the knives out for him. So,
I think the bar is raised a little bit between Peterson bringing bigger winning back and then knowing that you're going to have to – the money game is more important now, like with, I think, shrinking TV contracts and then having to go to the Big Ten. Like, I think he'll, as long as he closes this year, like with a New York Six Bowl, I think he can get a year off next year, maybe even a couple years of like 7 or 8 wins, 9 wins. But I mean, long term, I think the bar is going to be higher moving forward. Also, just because college football is going to be such a rat race now of like, you know, it's probably we're probably not that far from them relegating, doing relegation in like the Big Ten. And you're going to have to fight for, you know, one, to stay in your conference, and then two, to be, you know, you're going to be duking it out with Ohio State and Michigan every week, and Wisconsin and, you know, Penn State,
Purdue,
instead of
Indiana.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're going to start, booting the Purdues in Indiana, and it's going to be.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I don't think we're that far away from having to play. I'm just saying DeBoer, I think the bar is a little higher. And if DeBoer was to leave, I would think Jed Fish would be, I can't believe I'm saying it, would be one of the first names that popped off my head of would be looked at.
The New York lawyer?
Really? I mean, look what they're doing, man. They're, of course, they're going to, they might, they're, I think they, I don't, I'm not going to say they're going to make the Pac-12 championship, but like if the Huskies stumble, or if Oregon, you know, loses a couple games, they're not, they don't, Oregon, of course, doesn't have to fucking play them. They're looking pretty good and they're recruiting well. And yeah.
But look, unless something really tragic or bizarre happens.
Yeah, we don't need to get into that. Yeah, that's not really a conversation. That's not a conversation. Yeah.
This is Grumble trying to be a fly in the ointment. Did you guys happen to hear the Hardcore Husky podcast yesterday? They went on for 45 minutes about who's going to replace DeBoer.
Well, hey, Bison Duck takes our shit seriously.
Say that again.
I said Bison Duck takes our injury reports really serious. So, you know.
I like some of these ducks that come on there. They're flies in the ointment, and some of them seem like good guys, too. And,
hey, the Hardcore Husky guy said he was hurt and out for the game. Okay.
What should I care about, says Derek, without knowing precisely what's wrong with this team. Would you say it's time for our posters to crack each other's heads open and feast on the goo inside? Okay.
Unbelievable. Okay. Great Simpsons reference. I know you guys are Seinfeld guys, but... Great. Also, satire of fake news and fucking hype of shit of just like fucking shit.
You weren't there, man. Wants to know if Stanford wins the ACC next year.
I mean, Clemson sucks. That's a pretty shitball conference. I mean,
Florida State.
I mean, they seem like they're going to be on par. But who else is good in that conference? Nobody.
Miami seems to be circling the drain. So, did they win yesterday? They were losing last I checked, but
hopefully they lost.
Well, I don't know. I know Georgia Tech beat North Carolina. I saw that.
I wonder if Cristobal brought the SEC mentality to the ACC yet.
Oh, they won in overtime against Virginia.
Probably because of SEC mentality.
Yeah.
Good old meathead. You know, Miami represents everything that's wrong in college football, you know?
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Bananas the Blonde says the new AD tells DeBoer he has to fire at least three coaches. Who are the first three on the chopping block? Probably Morrell, Jen Huff, right?
He's not going to fire Morrell. He's going to force like Inge to leave or something. It's too bad. I don't know. I go back and forth. I kind of, I don't know. I like both of them, you know, but coaches don't fire guys. They really don't fire guys.
Let's see. We fired Dan DeRozio in 1988. Have we fired anybody since?
It takes a lot. I mean, Peterson kind of turfed Brent Pease.
He turfed, who was there? The lineman coach, too. Who
Strouser.
Couldn't
oh, duh.
Strouser.
I did like I do miss the TSIO guys of how much they hated Pease and Strouser. And how little they like to recruit and rather be fishing and hunting in Montana. Than calling some kid from fucking Richmond, California, and talking to him about
fucking Madden or something.
Well, they Peterson made a big mistake, I think. Who the fuck was that receiver coach that had to be
oh,
the coordinator
God.
For the Penn State game?
Was it the
Lubick?
Quit, and then
Lubick.
Lubick, the dreaded Lubick, yeah.
Yeah, he retired, yeah. And then he came back and coached for, I don't know, somebody the next year or whatever. But, you know, he had recruited some highly ranked players that didn't end up doing shit. But, you know, but
yeah.
They brought in Bush Hamden. That was a massive mistake.
I mean, yeah, I agree. I don't really know. I think it's going to take a lot for him to fire those guys. I mean, if they were going to do like a sideways thing like he did with Peace and what's his name, Strauss, or where they kind of take like a weird NFL job out of nowhere. Huff is a good candidate because he's not a DeBoer's guy. And I think Huff kind of got lucky. They had the three seniors last year in the interior who kind of just weren't great, but they were decent. He kind of had those guys, but now he's got to actually coach guys up. I don't think he can do it, and he's not recruiting super well. Then, yeah, I don't know. Inge Morrell, I don't know. Anyone on the defense would be the next – any of those guys on the defense would be the next guys to be questioned. I've heard the DB's coach actually can recruit, and it seems like the front seven coaches can't recruit to save their fucking lives. So
yeah,
I think the DB's
I would say Schmidt, Brechterfield, and like Sheridan, probably the.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know everybody hates Huff, but yeah, I mean that's the position group that's battled the injuries. Like everybody wanted, didn't people want Julius Brown and you know Chuck Morrell fired for the defensive backfield last year, and it was like yeah,
yeah.
They had like nine guys hurt, and they were trying out fucking fraternity guys, you know, during the week of the UCLA and ASU games last year to play.
Yeah, but this is a repeat thing, though, with the offensive line.
No, the offensive line was great last year.
It got decent to good as the you know it toward the end of the year. But if you look back at 2021 and 2020, I'm saying that there's a history that's repeating itself a bit here. So,
yeah, I kind of forgot last year, too.
Yeah.
Kirkland was injured, and they were struggling. And then Kirkland came back, like, admittedly, I think he was, like, 350 fucking pounds or something and played his way into shape. And it wasn't until really the end of the season that the offensive line kind of really got it together again. And I think that was a big part of it. So, yeah, I mean, Huff is questionable as hell. And they got to figure out something, especially with the new way teams are attacking them. So, yeah, I don't need to go too much more deep into that.
Yeah, I mean, who's the worst recruiter out of all of them?
Those coaches?
Any coach right now.
Only the DB's coach seems to be the only guy. Even Shepard, God, I don't know. I don't love it how you would think any receiver and quarterback right now would look at the fucking schemes and programs and coaching and what they're doing and just be like, yeah, even if I'm from fucking Pennsylvania, like, I want to go play there. And they just can't seem to recruit anyone beyond, like, a guy who's kind of like a base hit. It's weird to me.
Well, it seems like you would have thought – It's some weird shit like you would think in an air raid offense. Like, you know, why couldn't Mike Leach ever recruit like a five-star receiver that, you know, hey, you're going to catch like 1,000 passes this year. And they can never recruit like a five-star receiver or a, you know, a quarterback like, hey, you're going to throw the ball like, you know, 900 times this year. And can't land a five-star quarterback. Like it's weird stuff.
Yeah.
It, you know, you always hear it like how why would a receiver not want to play in this
True.
Team? Well, it's obvious at this point.
we're not handing out a bag of cash.
Yeah. No,
well, what other explanation could it be?
No, it's just I'm laughing at the blunt.
That is what it is, and I'll do my PSA of shitball dads who got fired from the Verizon store you work at, who are that 80 grand or whatever the fuck it is, after you pay taxes on it and after you pay the fellow scumbag who's taking his cut, you're not getting that money. So go wherever. Don't go to Oregon. Go to wherever. Josh Connerly Sr. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, when you're banking that 250 grand and you don't pay taxes and you get fucked on it, congratulations, buddy.
Yeah. But you hoard out your kid for cash. You're proud, proud man.
And you peacocked on Twitter.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. They also had
to an unhinged Husky fan no one likes.
So yeah. Bob C wants to know. Oh, go ahead.
No, we don't need to. That's off topic. We don't need to. We don't need the lunatic fringe anymore.
Bob C wants to know: does Oregon and Oklahoma jump us in the polls? And I just looked a moment ago to see if the polls have been released. I only saw Brett McMurphy's top 25, where he has Oregon now at 6 and Washington at 5. We played so poorly lately that if we drop to 6 or 7, can't complain about it. And the thing is, if you keep winning, though, you're going to be right there. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma lost to Kansas. It's fucking college football. It happens. It's very concerning. It's been 2 in a row. And, I mean, you look back, that Arizona win now looks a lot better, especially since, you know, given if, you know, we're back to hypothetical, but Bernard doesn't fumble, they're going to go up by 21 in the fourth on that team.
I know.
Yeah, then you go back, you get caught up in the, it's another thing of college football where I'm like, people get overhyped about a team blowing out average or below average teams, and we overhype that. And I think going back to that, like, you overhype teams who, like, who have you not lost to or, like, not had a tough game from? It's like, well, who have you beat? And Washington beat Oregon, and they won at Arizona. I mean, those are good fucking wins right now. It's hard to not get caught up in that, but, like, you got to think that way as well, too.
And Biak1 says he has a second coaching change question. When does Washington start to get healthy? Injuries seem very Ivan-esque at this point. And, of course, there's there's the longstanding, wait till Ivan gets a hold of him. It goes back to the Sark days.
Well, look at the Seahawks injuries now with body by Ivan, you know.
I mean, the schedule's not great in that – last year, I remember they were banged up, but they had the bye week, I think, after Cal or after Arizona, and they kind of gutted out. They kind of used that, and they don't have that this year. And these were kind of the games that were like, well, I mean, get through those games and, you know, the easiest you can and not play guys or limit guys. So maybe they really have been limiting snap counts and not playing guys they could have played more and not using the whole lot of scheme are going hard. That's my hope, in that next week we're going to see a different team. So that's all I can hope for. Other than that, I'm like, yeah, I don't like the fucking schedule at all for injuries.
You know, well, if we're getting to the point in college football where, you know, this NIL deal and transfer portal, it's turning into free agency, you know, in the NFL, there's no, you cannot predict the NFL ever.
Yeah.
Week to week, you can't predict it. There's really no guaranteed wins.
Correct.
So in college football, it's probably getting more and more like the NFL in that way. Like, you know, yeah, you know, a team gets blown out, you know, Arizona State gets blown out at home by Fresno State in week two or whatever, but then progressively gets better and better and better, and then can play Washington tough on the road for no inexplicable reason. Well, and then the next week they go back home and they, you know, they beat the shit out of the Cougs. You know, I'm sure in week three, you know, Cougar fans were like, oh, we got a win from Arizona State coming up. We'll go down there and get a win in Tempe, you know. And now it's like, oh yeah, Arizona State looks like a decent team now.
Yeah, ASU might
circle the drain.
Coug circle drain. Yeah, I mean ASU. They're probably pretty decent. I think they'll win. I think their schedule's pretty tough, but they might win a few more games the rest of the way. I think Stanford's another team that's going to get kind of like get better as the weeks go on. I don't think they're like a disaster. It's as you're saying. Yeah, it's going to be another thing is depth with the transfer portal. Like the depth is going to be so bad on teams that you saw it last year and you see it this year, at least at Washington, where it's like if you get injured at a spot, you're fucked because your guys who like would have been there, like last year, like Jacoby Covington, who's like a C-minus fucking corner in the Pac-12, he should have been on the fucking Huskies, like, instead of transferring somewhere for, like, no reason. So, yeah, portal.
Savelle Smalls would be playing, you know, significant minutes here this year, and he also fucking transferred at, like, the last minute, too.
Yeah.
So he really fucked him over.
Yeah, it's,
For all we know, though, they might have encouraged him.
Yeah, I think they didn't think that they wouldn't have Durfee. I think they didn't think that they wouldn't have Durfee. And I think, I don't know what happened to that ASU guy. I don't know what that they brought in and then didn't bring in. Depth is, I don't follow other teams closely enough, but yeah, I assume other teams are like Washington now where it's like, if you lose one, like two players at a position, like you're fucked. Like I know the ASU coach was saying last week, he was like,
I forgot about that guy.
Gilmore. Yeah. The ASU coach last week was like, and after the game was like, if you're 330 pounds and you're on you go to school at ASU, come call us because we don't have anyone on kick team. Like, cause we have so many injuries. And yeah, it's like if now with portal, like you lose two guys at a position, like you're fucking having a fucking tryout with frat guys because someone went to go play somewhere or not play somewhere instead of just
at what
staying
point,
home. And
at what point does college football institute the trading deadline?
I mean, that's a good question of like, cause I don't know. I do remember Smalls leaving late and you're fucked if someone leaves late and now you're going to have guys who shut it down halfway through the season and then transfer out. That's a whole, it's like an off season topic, but they gotta install some sort of fucking rules with that stuff. And, I still think in conference transfers are bullshit. Even if Washington benefits from it. It sucks. The depth thing is going to get worse and worse.
Pineapple Pirate looks like he's done some sort of copy pasta of some Jimmy Buffett lyrics or something here. I don't know what's going on, so we're just gonna move on from that. Is this a serious question or not?
Overrated.
Okay. You weren't there, man. Said if the Huskies had to play Cal next week, who wins and what's the score? I'd say Huskies would win by 7 to 10 points at least. I think.
I would say 14-17
against
at home. Cal?
Yes. If the Dogs played Cal next week, who wins and what's the score? I wouldn't be, you know, we'd win 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be as confident as I should be, but, I mean, they look better than they did early in the season. They're fine. They're Cal. They're Wilcox Cal. They're going to be, like, a weird team that's going to – they're always going to either beat someone or give them way harder of a game than they should, depending on who he has grudges against. Like, he probably hates USC. So, yeah, they probably got up for that game, but then they're going to get bombed by fucking some shit team.
You're asking hypothetically if Cal would be all greased up?
Oh, yeah.
They weirdly were like the ones, actually, to be fair, they weirdly were like the one team this year, I feel like, the Huskies played that wasn't greased up. It was kind of, they like didn't seem to be that into that game. Granted, maybe the pick six on the first play and then the like punt return, like on the fourth play, just took the wind out of their sails. But that was weirdly, we never really got into that. I mean, now that the season's been unfolded, that was like the one team that didn't seem like they really gave a fuck in the way that they should in that game.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Tulsa seemed to have more effort than Cal did.
I don't know. It was fucking weird.
Duc DuJour wants to know, is it possible DeBoer, Grubb, or anyone else on the staff has pneumonia? I do not have that inside information, so I don't know. Or the crud. Any comments, or should I move on?
The crud.
AEB wants to know, did Giles Jackson get caught up in the Michigan sign-stealing scandal? He's been missing for 2 weeks now.
Didn't
I don't know.
Did he play last week?
Didn't he return a couple of kickoffs last week or something? Or am I thinking
Org? I thought he caught a pass, too, last week.
Yeah, he was a little out there against ASU, which is, like, again, the thing of when people are, like, hyping up Oregon and downgrading Washington. It's like, yeah, Giles Jackson had a really good game against Oregon, like, and then he played like shit against ASU. Like, what do you want to do? That fucking happens. I don't know.
ASU, he had 3 catches for 16 yards.
Yeah, like, that shit happens. Like, I don't know. Maybe they didn't give a fuck about ASU. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, I don't think he played at all. I know he was obviously hurt for, like, the first 6 games, so either re-aggravated or maybe they're just like, hey, we can beat Stanford without him. Let's get him 100%, which is, I know what they're doing. I'm sure they did that with Thule. Asa, I think they probably did that with Asa Turner. I think they probably limited some guys like Cal Jackson. Yeah, that they probably were like, hey, we can beat this team without him, so let's just not play him.
I don't know. We got a bunch of Haley's comment things, though. Like, guys, they appear, and then they're gone. And then you almost start to forget about them, and then they appear in the sky again, you know?
Yeah, it's been weird. So, it's a good sign to me because it's the kind of shit that we always bitch about with other teams where we're like, God, we lost to Oregon, and, like, fucking Keenan Lowe or someone, like, went off, and you're like, that's what happens when you're good is, like, you have random, like, fucking –
But somebody on the boards, I don't remember who it was, but they said, you know, like, for example, if you're Will Nixon and you really feel like you can contribute, and I don't know that this is the case, but if he has no idea at kickoff whether he's going to have 8 carries or 2 carries or 12 carries or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, yeah.
You know,
He had one carry yesterday.
And we've all been thinking, oh, let's get him the ball 5-6 times a game. Even throwing to him out of the backfield.
Is Nagata hurt?
I don't know.
Maybe he's got the crud. I don't know. Maybe he's got the crud. I mean, yeah.
Forgot about that guy, too.
Yeah. I mean, Lawson at all, too, since he fumbled against Arizona. I mean, Bernard in the first 3 to 4 games, Jeremy Bernard looked like he was going to be like a dude too. And now he's just like, obviously he got hurt against Arizona, Oregon, and he fumbled against Arizona. But that's like another thing of like, God, can anything go right? Like, yeah, he looked like he was going to be the best number 4 receiver in America, practically, or at least in the Pac-12. And then he's just like, now he's nothing. Now we're like wishing Giles Jackson was back. So it's just been weird and unlucky.
Well, I'm not
going
to chalk him up. I'm not going to chalk him up to this year's James Johnson Award or whatever. He might still do something studly next year, you know. But
Bernard made a couple. I think he had like 2 third down catches yesterday.
Yeah,
that were big.
He also had a big. I think may have been even like a 70-yard touchdown. And Penix just overthrew him because he was behind the defense. It's like in the second quarter. Then he stretched out for it, but it was just a little too far.
Oh, yeah.
But you're just forgetting, like, when you say the thing of, like, if we play Oregon again, like, we're going to get blown out. But it's like, I don't know, what if Jalen McMillan and Jeremy Bernard 100%? Like, they couldn't stop them without those guys. So, yeah, like, you got to think that stuff, too.
So let's see here. Louis M. 2 Wash. I haven't read this ahead of time. So is it just me, or do we not adjust play calling on either side of the ball as the game goes on? And then on offense, as soon as it feels like it isn't easy for us to go deep downfield, we start to panic. Zero screen, draw stuff. Zero passes to the tight ends in that 3 to 7 yard range. It's all on Penix's shoulders to win the game, making big plays. We've already kind of talked about this. I will say from a defensive standpoint, we opened the game yesterday noticeably more aggressive in the first couple of series with blitzing, and then we seemed to go back to our bend but don't break philosophy. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah. For this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Stanford, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, at least defensively, it really seemed like they were getting after that guy. Then it just kind of like you flipped it on him, and it was like, oh, shit, don't pressure him because he's just going to run. He's either just going to hang on to the ball then throw a jump ball downfield, or he's going to run for 12 yards. So it's after Penix, I don't want another fucking non-mobile quarterback again. Got to have him. It just changes everything.
Yeah.
It's so fucking hard to fucking hard to defend. So hard.
It's a 12th player on offense.
Yeah, great point.
You know. Yeah, and they're so good at coaching and developing now across the board that it used to be if you had a mobile guy, it was like, fine, he can't fucking throw the ball at all. But now they get developed. they get developed so early in their, like, starting, like, fucking fourth grade now to be a throwing quarterback that now it's ridiculous almost if you don't have one, and Penix is better be the last fucking guy.
So the HB wants to know, should Jalen McMillan just be shelved? Seems like they can't count on him, and it hurts the team when he tries to play. This is him talking, not me. Tell him to go pro or come back next year, but quit fucking around.
Hard to say when you don't know what the situation is. I have no
exactly.
idea. Yeah.
Well, maybe they limit his snap counts. And
to two?
They're saying, hey, we need to get – what?
I said to two.
Yeah.
All right, he's got his quota.
Maybe they're saying, like, hey, we need you to act like you're, you know, ready to play, and that way we can throw off the team. You know, once they see you out there, they're going to focus on having to cover all three of you, and then we'll pull you out. And really, he's not going to be fully healthy till. I bet until they go down to Corvallis or something. He's got like a hyperextended knee or something, you know.
I did think they were trying to do that against Oregon for sure. I thought they were like trying to use them as like a decoy early on and, yeah, kind of like make them adjust to that. But, yeah, I think that's a good theory.
So Denark wants to know, did this team peak against Oregon, or is the best still to come?
I think we went Great over that. They had a bad stretch last year, too.
But we didn't make any official pronouncements on behalf of the Hardcore Husky podcast that the best is yet to come. We started bitching about the refs, and then we started bitching about, you know. So.
To me, it all depends on Penix's health. If he's going to be like, if he genuinely had like broken ribs or something fucked up and it's not going to get better, I do think we may have seen the best, which we always knew was a possibility once he became the guy. If not, then I think it's very possible that they're just kind of working through some ugly games, didn't really wanted to just get through these two games with a win and get guys healthy. It'd be really nice if they had a bye week still, but yeah, I don't think it's not possible, but to me, the big thing is the Penix health.
Well, I mean, USC is going to score anywhere from 40 to 56 points against us. So the question is, can we you know, outscore them. And the only way they only score 40 is if they, like, you know, fumble twice inside our 20 or something. So,
why can't Washington be the team that gets way overhyped and super pumped up to go play in LA and limit USC to like 20 points or something?
These Washington Huskies are all greased up at the Coliseum.
Yeah, why can't Washington get all greased up for one?
Well, I mean, the script has been individual games and within games like Oregon. If the defense is playing, the offense won't. If the offense is playing, the defense isn't. Like, so we'll see. Maybe except that Michigan State is terrible and their coach had been fired for jacking off before. I think that just seems to be the way this season's going to go. Because even against Oregon in the game, you're like, oh, the offense is great. And then it's like the defense is just sucking. And then the defense steps up and you're like, all right, game over. And then it's like, oh, all of a sudden the offense is fucking terrible.
And Mutson asked a question that we've already really basically just wanted to know what's going on and what's the real Huskies and all this, but we've already kind of gone over all that.
All the above.
The HB says, I think Penix needs to go back to wearing the shade shield. When defenders see his eyes, it's an advantage. I don't know. I don't think it's.
I don't know.
Hooligan.
Good point.
Wait a minute now. Here's this acronym that I don't know what it means, but the last time I did know what it means, then Bayes said it had something to do with his endowed member or something. I would like to shout. Wait, wasn't it? I'd like to shout out. Oh, I'm not going to waste people's time trying to figure this out. Anyways, Husky Hooligan is a one-trick pony. So moving on.
Purple Bayes and his massive dong. I would like to shout.
I got thrown off by that A there.
I would like to say a shout out to Purple Bayes and his massive dong.
There we go.
Man. That's 30 seconds we'll never get back.
Wish I had the last 30 seconds of my life back. Because everything's a write-off, Jerry. These big companies, they write off everything. SEC dog is just rambling on about how important the SEC is and keep chopping wood. We love SEC dog, but okay. Doug DuJour with an acronym that I'm too tired to try to decipher. SEC dog with a another one that I'm too okay. We're almost wrapped up here, folks. Does it seem like the team is suffering from inadequate strength and conditioning? We already had kind of the wait till Ivan gets a hold of them discussion. And so I don't know. I don't even know if we ever really directly addressed that or not. But health is certainly an issue, whatever the origins.
Yeah.
Okay. You weren't there, man, with the kind of a hearty, hard, hard question. So
yeah, Oregon should just bow out and walk up here and hand it to us. Really?
All
should.
Right, since you said really that, should. I have to let the listeners know what we're talking about. He said if the Dwags, spelled that intentionally, if the Dwags finished, it's because we had some coach about 3 years ago that typed Dwags in his Twitter post or whatever, and then that's become a thing. So if the Dwags finish 4-0 to complete one last Northwest championship, do you think Oregon will bow out of the Pac-12 conference championship? It sounds like you're strangling animals up there, Bully. And to let Washington rep the West in the playoffs. So it's hearty har har. Nacho Man with a hearty har har. And then the last one here, it's from 1-2-3-9-2-8-3-1 were taken. He says, end by the 9 a.m. deadline, which he posted this at 8:50. Let's talk stupid penalties. Do they matter? Pete Carroll has been known at both levels for highly penalized teams that win championships anyway. Was he the one that called it the least important statistic or something like that? Personally, I'm ready. And again, this is the poster talking, not me. Personally, I'm ready to strangle the nearest cute puppy the next time one of these dumbass players blatantly piles on or headbutts an opponent after the whistle or lines up in the neutral zone during a third down stop. In 8 years of playing football, I think I had one flag thrown on me for a false start or something. It's not fucking hard. The penalties are a problem.
Well, yeah, there's I think once you get the reputation of being a penalized team, I think it goes a lot into, you know, mentality of, you know, the officials or whatever. And I think once you get the reputation of you're a clean team and you don't get penalized, then I think it's kind of a mentality thing. You know, we've got a label that we're penalized, that we commit a lot of penalties right now. So,
we do.
Yeah, I think it just snowballs, though. I mean, you never see the Pete Carroll says every single week, we got to clean it up, got to clean it up, got to clean it up, or whatever. And then it never gets cleaned up, and you'll see penalties, and you're like, every team commits that penalty. Yet Seahawks get called for it. By the way, did you know, remember that late hit? Woolly Duke just texted that he's jumping off, so he's gone.
Okay.
Did remember that late hit that the lineman did on Elijah Jackson, and Tim Brando and Spencer Tillman really thought it was going to be on one of the Washington defenders, and
yep.
None of the Washington defenders did anything. I really thought it was going to be on, you know, Mikel Esteen on that, you know, for a little retaliation, but, and it's like, what? Nobody did anything. The lineman came over. And
you know what? That gave Washington a first down. It's just so unfortunate.
Yeah. It was like, what are you so disappointed about?
Oh, man. Well, before we wrap up, do you want to trash talk Willie Duke at all with anything?
No.
I'm joking, of course.
No, we're good.
So, this was a long episode, wasn't it? An hour 45 or so. But anyways.
No, it was his birthday a few days ago, so I'll give him a week off.
you mean like this past week?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, how old is he?
Yep.
Because I know he's around 40, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's around 40.
Because he was born like around 92 or something, right?
I mean, he's...
No,
I guess since he disclosed he's in Orcas Island with his girlfriend, I could say that he's 38. And I'm not disclosing too much personal information.
Well, I didn't ask you to let us know his home address and blood type and social security number, but... his crypto wallet address. So, well, anyways, I'll get to editing here. So, this is one of our longest episodes, I think. So, anyways, talk to you soon, buddy.
Yeah.
Pal, chief, bud. So, all right.
Yeah, I need to go fix my truck. So,
okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Hardcore Husky Podcast. This show is copyrighted material. In other words, stop plagiarizing our shit, fuckos. So please tell a friend and rate us 5 stars on iTunes, especially you cheap bastards who don't donate. It's the least you could do. Yeah, I'm looking at you, creepy coog. And come join our fun over at hardcorehusky.com. We've got Husky Football, Yellow Snow's Record Shop, and our notorious Tug Tavern, which is a shit show of politics and strange news. And if you enjoy yourself and are ready for the next level of cyber
peyote,
come join Swain's Wigwam. I'm going to have to read this over.
Sway's Wigwam, yeah.
Sway's Wigwam at Navajo Nation's gift to college football. It's also the official private club of Hardcore Huskies. We're talking boobs, guns, and inside information, all for the low fee of $129 a year. Come join the fun. after he did that one, but